obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come out this weekend. Especially like to thank Deb for being in touch with me and being diligent about getting me out here. I was talking to my boy Carl this morning at breakfast, and Carl really lit us up Friday night, as he always does. You know, and we were talking about, you know, placement, and he's already off duty, and it's nice to start this thing off and get it out of the way, you know. But there's also something about participating in the countdown. And no disrespect, you know, I like the countdown because it lets us know how many people we hear or who are here. That are the most important people in the room. I'm an image guy. I need to let you know who I am and who the guy is you have in front of you this morning. I'm an image guy. I'm a make you like me guy. You know, all front, no back. You know, pretty much ain't interested in telling the truth, just interested in what I could convince you of. That's the kind of guy I am, you know. So since I'm out here and we had a lady with 53 years and we had a bunch of people stand up with 30 years, 40 years, you know, my inclination is to impress you guys with how much I know about the book, drop some page line references on you, you know, go through that kind of deal. But the countdown always makes me right size. Because no disrespect to the oldest old timer, and I'm glad you were here, and I'm glad you guys kept the light on for a drunk like me. No disrespect to any of you. No disrespect, Carl, throwing down, you know, Friday night, 28 years. No, just, but those two young ladies that stood here and my friend that came out with me, I came to talk to you. I came to talk to you. One lady stood up here and said she's got 14 hours. And you looked at the lady with 53 years and you probably thought to yourself, I ain't even think about that. That don't even happen. And then you saw the procession of people standing up and standing up and standing up. And one of two things can happen. I can get inspired that this can happen for me too. Or more likely for somebody like me. I'd be thinking, yeah, that's happening for you. That can never happen for me. And we know what you've been through, and we know where you've been. I know what you're feeling. I'm jittery and alone. I can't do this, but you can. You have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. I like that part, and we a vision for you. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. I remember being new to the rooms. I remember them bringing me to a meeting. I remember the speaker standing up in front of the group, somewhat like I am this morning, hair comb, eyes bright, stringing sentences together real well. I remember thinking to myself that morning, I know this cat ain't been where I've been. I know he ain't done what I've done. I know he ain't felt what I felt. What can this lame tell me? So it's real important that I let you know that the man that's standing in front of you this morning is not the same one that stumbled up into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous some few summers ago. I'm going to share with you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, what I'm like today, in the hopes that you might be thinking like I was thinking. I used to go through the same. I used to feel the same way. I used to do the same things. Or more important, I too want to have this thing. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I grew up in the heart of Watts. I'm one of six boys. We stayed in a little two-bedroom apartment. Moms and pops stayed in one room. Six boys stayed in three bunk beds in the other room. My earliest memory of my old man was he was an alcoholic, and I didn't want to be like him. My father wasn't abusive, and my father wasn't violent. He was an absentee drunk. And every other Friday, like clockwork, you knew he would not show up with a check. It would be a kid in the neighborhood feel like it was his duty to tell my family how my old man had performed up at the pool hall, and I feel ashamed and I feel embarrassed. Those are feelings I'm familiar with from an early age. Pops got put out when I was 8 or 9 years old. Moms proceeded to raise these 6 boys by herself. Don't know about you, but when I grew up, ideal family life, you took it from the TV programs of the day. I'll date myself. The program that showed ideal families when I was growing up, Ozzy and Harriet, Father Knows Best, My Three Sons, Leave It to Beaver, Donna Reed. That wasn't jumping off in my house, you know. When you're grown, you get something that's called perspective. Perspective works like this. You got a mom that raised 6 boys by herself. Old Southern Baptist sister. My mother was on welfare when I was a little kid, and she refused to settle for a lot. And my mom put herself back through high school. She put herself through college. She worked 2 jobs. She took in clothes that she washed and ironed for other folk. And when you're grown, you look back on your life and say, damn, I had a hell of a mom. Look how she sacrificed to raise these 6 boys. But when you were a kid, you know, and you coming home from school on a Wednesday afternoon with a couple of partners, and you hit the front door, mom's in the living room with an ironing board up and a rag on her head, you don't feel proud. You feel ashamed and embarrassed, and you start bringing partners home from school. And if your name is Ralph, you start living in the prison I've lived in much of my life, and that's the prison of what I think you think about me. I don't know what you think about me, but I'm trapped in what I think you think about me, and I will do whatever it takes to shape and form and mold your opinion of Ralph. I'll wine you, I'll dine you, I'll woo you, I'll con you, I'll bully you, I'll manipulate you, I'll buy you. Please like me. Now, I don't particularly have to like your ass, but please like me. To our new friends in the room, you'll hear a lot of common themes if you keep going to meets of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the common themes you'll hear from most our members when they get up and share at a group is, I never felt like I fit in. And that's not a part of my story. I'm a little guy, I like a lot of attention. I've never been interested in fitting in. I've always wanted to stand out. And as a result of that, I achieved and I accomplished a couple of things in life. You know, my brother, I got 5 brothers. And 4 of us eventually made it to the program. And one of my brothers, he talks a lot too, Ron. And if you listen to Ron's story, you know, he's a year younger than me, and he's 3 months older than me in recovery. We literally slept in the same bed, his feet to my head, vice versa. Same bed, same house, same environment. Came out with 2 entirely different perspectives. When you hear Ronnie's story, he always felt like he wanted to be somebody else, doing something else, being someplace else. Me, on the other hand, I couldn't imagine being anybody other than me. I couldn't imagine being anybody other than a young brother growing up in Watts in the 60s. It was a changing time. It was a turbulent time. I was going to make something out of myself, and I was going to be an asset to my community. I'm the kid that went to sleep on Christmas Eve with all his clothes on because I couldn't wait for Christmas Day to come. Mind you, moms only had $40 or $50 as a budget for these 6 boys, so you know we wasn't getting a lot. Chinese checkers, dominoes, Monopoly game. I might get a glove. But on Christmas morning, it would be smells in the house, and it would be cooking, and it would be laughter, and the boys would open up their gifts, and family would come over, and moms would be up, and we'd go out and play, and I couldn't imagine being anybody other than me. Just couldn't imagine it. Never knew a lonely moment. You know, baseball was my game. Me and my brothers made up the whole infield. One of my brothers played left field. You know, just growing up. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, there are lots of times, sometimes people talk about, you know, I'm not going to share a long drunk log, you know, everybody know I drink. That's not why I share my story. You know, I love when Carl was up here sharing about the variations in alcohol. The face of the alcoholic, there ain't one face of the alcoholic, and there ain't one story of the alcoholic, you know. And so I'm not here to report to you guys this morning that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a product of a broken home. Somebody in here grew up with both parents in the house. I'm not here to report to you guys this morning I'm an alcoholic because we didn't have no money. Somebody in here grew up with a silver spoon. I'm not here to report to you this morning I'm an alcoholic because my daddy was. Somebody in here grew up with parents who never drank. I'm not here to report to you this morning I'm an alcoholic because I'm a poor kid from the ghetto. Look around the room, you know that ain't the reason. I'm not here to report to you guys this morning not here to report to you guys this morning. I'm an alcoholic because I'm a little guy. We got some big guys. My boy Stevie up here. You know, I'm an alcoholic for two reasons and two reasons only. One, when I take one, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. Two, when I sincerely don't want to put it in me and start it up again, I put it in me and start it up again anyway. I'm bodily and mentally different. That's it. That's all. The rest is my story. My story goes a little bit like this. Every single one of you had me in your classroom. I was usually class president, student body president. I was a straight A student. I was teacher's pet. I played ball. I made all stars. On the outside, I should have been okay. On the inside, I've always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Yeah, I was teacher's pet. Yeah, I was straight A student. Would have traded it all in if I could have been cool. If I just could have been cool, right? Because in my neighborhood, it was a whole lot more currency placed on cool than on smart. You know, some of the cats who was cool, I see you sitting up in here right now. The ones who was in the bathroom smoking cigarettes, shooting dice, taking quarters from guys like me that brought extra quarters with them, you know, and you knew how to talk to girls, and girls were a mystery to me. Let me holler, you know, fellas, I don't know why it is that you guys always had a handle on this manhood thing I just didn't seem to have. I don't know if it's because I didn't have old man at the house. I didn't get the manual. I didn't get the memo. I just didn't know. You know, 13 years old, cats would be talking about throwing down with girls already. I didn't know y'all were lying, but I would be thinking to myself, be thinking to myself, how come I don't know? You know, later on in life, I always ran with a crew, you know, and I would have a crew of dudes. And later in life, you know, we'd be going clubbing. And in my crew, it would always be a couple of players, a couple of pretty boys in there. And one of my boys, he'd always have one of you girls in the corner. You know, I'm ear hustling because he'd have you giggling. And I want to know, what do you say to make a girl giggle? You know, because I didn't have that in me. But that's who I was, you know. So that's how I'm growing up. I'm 16 years old. Ain't touched nothing. Now, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Carl thought he was late. I really was late. Alcoholics Anonymous, that's like, it took me a while to get comfortable telling my story in AA. Because this is the first joint I ever landed in where folk try to out-bottom each other, right? My first home group, 9604 South Figueroa, right? And Figueroa, for many of you, that's a street that's well known. And one of the things Figueroa is known for is got a lot of ladies who work in the evening and who don't get W-2s. Let's leave it like that, you know. So Figueroa is the stroll, right? And so, you know, 9604 is a hard group, but it had hard recovery, strong recovery. And when I first landed at 96, cats would be up in there sharing. And the more, like Carl said, the more, you know, gory the story, the more interested I get. And I wanted a penitentiary story without going to the pen to get it, right? But my story's my story, and I'm not willing to go get another. I'm a schoolboy, and I'm a square. And I'm a shy guy, you know, and I got comfortable finally. So I'm 16, I ain't touched nothing. You know, Ralph would, you know, and I get a girlfriend when I'm 16. Now, Ralph with a girlfriend don't mean the same thing it means for some of you cats. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 simply means this. I ran with a crew of dudes that went with the same group of girls. One of my boys broke up with this girl, waited a little time to pass, told my other boy I want to go with her. He went and asked her, came back and told me. She said, yes, now I got a girlfriend, right? Don't know what to do with her because I don't do girls. You know, I carry her books home every now and then. This is my official, check this out. This is my official girlfriend. I had had other girlfriends before, but this one actually knew she was my girlfriend, right? So this particular night, we out on a double date. Me and my girl in the back seat, older partner of mine, him and his girl in the front seat. He driving. Plastic cup of rum and coke come to the back seat this particular night. Drank it down, went down real warm, rushed back to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hand started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things it had never said. I had arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to be and to say things I wouldn't do, be and say without it. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. The Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about me in lots of places. New friends, we have a chapter in the front of our book called The Doctor's Opinion. And there's a line in The Doctor's Opinion that jumped out at me the first time I read it. Men and women like me drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. I understood that the first time I read it. I'm not overnight alcoholic. I understand we talk about this disease being progressive in nature because that's how it showed up in my experience. That first night I drank, I didn't get pissy drunk. I didn't throw up all over myself. I didn't make a fool out of myself. I got a warm, tipsy feeling. I kissed and licked and sucked on my girl in some places I had never done before. And that's how my drinking stayed. You know, I would drink to go out on the weekends and party. I graduated from high school in 71, and I graduated to higher education in every sense of the word. In 71, I was drinking on the weekends to go to parties. By the end of 71, I'm drinking not only on the night of the weekend, but I'm drinking during the day to get ready for the party. By 1972, I'm drinking not only on the weekends, but now I'm drinking during the week after class, and I've added some non-addictive marijuana to the mix. By the end of 72, I'm drinking and I'm smoking herb and I'm selling herb. By 1973, drinking, smoking herb, selling herb, doing other drugs, doing it on a daily basis, couldn't have told me it was anything wrong with the way I was living. The Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about at a certain point in my drinking career, I won't be able to tell the truth from the false. And the way that that worked for me was this. Isn't the way that I'm doing it, isn't that the way everybody does it? Why would you be young, with a bright future, with a little bit of money, then chasing women and getting loaded, come with the territory? In those days, man, if you came over my house and I couldn't offer you something to drink or something to smoke, I wasn't being a good host. And if I went over your house and you didn't do the same for me, not only weren't you being a good host, wasn't coming over your house no more. Come on. For what? Wasn't nothing to discuss, you know? You know, check this out. No disrespect to our young friends. I don't mean new friends. Young friends. I'm glad I grew up in the era I grew up. I'm glad I grew up in the time I grew up. I grew up in a time when you would go to concerts, you didn't even have to know your neighbor. You just passed. And you know what I'm saying? I came up in the late 60s, early 70s, you know. And it was, and you know, it was a changing time. It was a turbulent time. In some ways, it seemed like a simpler time. In 2015, folk got to worry about practicing safe sex because you got deadly sexually transmitted disease. Man, back in those days, I'd go to a club, I'd have a one-question interview for a girl. You get high? If not, next. Don't need to know your last name. Don't want to know your sign. Don't want to know your mommy. Let's get to the basis of this relationship. You drinking like I'm drinking? And that's just the way it was. I'm at this major university, man. You know, I'm going to go here. Let me go over here for a minute and come back. I'm at this major university. But I came, if any of our new friends, you know, and I know we have newcomers, and we have used newcomers, you know, and the used newcomer is, you know, that's a hard way. And some people will be saying to you, you know, my friend said, oh, some people will say, it took a lot of courage, you know, like Mel stood up to, and some people will say, it took a lot of courage for you to stand up. I don't know about that. I don't know whether it's courage, I don't know what that is, but what I pray for you is desperation. I pray you desperation. That's what got me up in here. I pray you desperation. And I bounced around. I understand that feeling. I understand that feeling. You know, when Bill talks about it, nobody can turn a phrase the way he did. He talked about the quicksand stretched out all around. Alcohol was my master. I understood that. And I understand that feeling and just I don't have no way out. You know, and how dark it is, it's got to get dark. And so I pray that. I bounced in here 3 or 4 times in my early attempts at Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is what I do. You know, I come in. I'm a good mimic. I'm a good chameleon. You know, I listen to a speaker share, I pick out what in my ears was the most profound things he said, go to a meeting the next and I repeat what the speaker said, tack on and keep coming back, and thought because I claimed it from the podium it would be true in my experience, and I kept getting loaded, kept getting loaded, kept getting loaded. So there are some thin lines in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the thinnest lines that makes all of the difference is a thin line between comparing and identifying. In my early attempts at this deal, I was always comparing, I was never identifying, and I couldn't find myself in you guys, in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't find myself in any of you guys' stories. I read Bill's story in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. First thing I say, Bill is an older white guy. Psh, we don't have that in common. You know, Bill was a veteran of foreign wars, Vietnam-era draft dodger. You know, Bill was a Wall Street stockbroker. Check out the way I handle money. You know we ain't got that in common. You read Bill's story, he said there had been no real infidelity. Miss me on that one, too. You know, so I'd always find all the differences. I'd do the same things when you guys got up here and shared your story. I didn't do that. I don't look like that. I never do that. I don't feel like, you know, I do the same thing. And somebody, when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay, somebody taught me how to read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, Ralph, the same way that you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous is the same way that you listen to our members share their stories. When you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous and when you listen to our members share their experience, strength, and hope, ask yourself 3 or 4 questions. Ask yourself, did I drink like he drank? Did I think like he thought? Did I feel like he felt? Or did I do what he did? And when I read Bill's story in the light of those questions, I found my story. Just like Bill, I'm at this major university, and just like him, the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. Drink started taking a more important and exhilarating part in my life, too. You know, and I'm living up in the dorms, man, and that's just what you do. You know, and drink started taking a more important. I'm drinking every day. You know, and Bill said something strange in his story. He said, out of this alloy of drink and speculation, out of this combination of his thinking and his drinking, he would later forge a weapon that would turn on him like a boomerang and all but cut him to ribbons. Trust me, I don't talk like that. You know, and, you know, old folk where I come from had a shortcut version of that one. They just used to say, trouble always starts out like fun. You know, and you couldn't have told me I'm up in the dorms drinking that Spinata, drinking that Tyrolia, drinking that Annie Greenspring, drinking that Boone's Farm, drinking that Brass Monkey, drinking that Tanqueray, drinking, you know, now I'm moving up to Corbell and I'm drinking Remy and I'm drinking. You couldn't have told me alcohol was going to do what it did to me. You couldn't have told me, because that's how I'm rolling. You know, I'm rolling with the people that I wanted to roll with. I'm at this major university, man. I'm with cats who we were going to be watching playing in the league on Sundays. I'm with cats who we were going to be watching in the association during the week. I'm with people that were going to be political leaders in this town, in this state, and in this country. Rolling with people who were going to be captains of industry. I'm going to be one of them. I'm going to be one of them. Couldn't have told me it was going to do what it did. Came out of this school and I started working as a counselor for LA City Schools. And even though I had the kind of job that should have allowed me to acquire what normal people acquire, I never did that. Snapshot of Ralph's life, this is when alcohol was working. I'd buy a car, make exactly 3 car payments, then come find it. Come find it. First time I had a car repossessed, I had the nerve to call LAPD, you know. I'm 9 months behind on the note. Next 2 times, I didn't even trip. I already knew, you know. I'm the kind of brother never had a problem balancing a bank book. Payday, I got money. 2 days later, broke. 0. No problem balancing my bank book. Stayed in the crib from 1976 to 1979 without paying rent. Couple of baffling features about the disease I suffer from, and one of them is this. I can't see my relationship with alcohol until I'm free of it. I can't see what it's doing to me when I'm in the mix. So some of the things that are crystal clear to me now, looking back in the rearview mirror of experience, were not at all clear to me when I was going through them. One fact stands out real clear to me about the days I thought alcohol was working. I used to go to work for 2 weeks to live for 2 days. That's it. That's all. Can't tell you the day or the time or the hour. Can't tell you where I was or what I was doing. When alcohol ceased to be a luxury for me and became a necessity, I can tell you that it did happen. Anybody else, you know, got this same resentment at them? You know what I don't like about the invisible line? Somebody in here probably know. It's invisible. It ain't nothing to say. When you take this next one, you are entering the region from which is no return through human. It ain't nothing to say that. You know, cold thing about the disease I suffer from is, check this out. By the time I realize I have a problem and need to do something about it, it's already too late for me to do something about it. Cold thing. Anybody else play the regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous? Huh? Regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous goes something like this. If I only knew then what I know now, I never would have. Yeah, right. Remind me of a story I like to tell about a little boy named Johnny. And Johnny had a habit his father frowned on. Johnny used to like to play with himself. Father goes to work, comes home early one day. Little Johnny's bedroom door is closed. Father opens the door without knocking. Sure enough, little Johnny's in the bedroom masturbating. Father looks at him and said, son, I thought I told you if you keep doing that, you'll go blind. Little Johnny looked at his dad and said, well, Daddy, can I just do it till I need glasses? You know, and I'm like, I like that story because that story reminds me of me and the life. I see you going down, you going down, you going down. I'm just going to do it till I need glass. And the book talks about seeking the Lord companion. It wasn't long before I became the Lord companion. And we don't have enough time for me to tell you all the things that should have been signs along the way. I got married on a Saturday afternoon in April of 1980. I had a bachelor party the night before my wedding. None of the guys at the bachelor party are getting married the next day. They all have sense enough to go home 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still at my bachelor party till 7:30 in the morning, me and my brothers. They take me home and 7:30, pour me in the bed, get me up at 10 o'clock for my 1 o'clock wedding. I'm tore up. I'm one of them tore up
one of them nights where you're trying to stop the bed from rotating. You don't have nothing left to throw up but stomach lining like that, you know. And I'm supposed to say my own vows at this wedding. So they get me up at 10, and I stagger up in there. You know, I get to the wedding, and my then wife-to-be looked at me stumbling and staggering, and she looked at the preacher. She said, okay, scratch the own vows. Say the regular on his ass, right? So now my lines are cut to two words, you know. So we get into the ceremony, and it gets to me. I get ready to say, and threw up all over. Passed out. Have not taken a wedding picture to this day. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. New friends, if you're anything like me, when I first hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, although the words they used in the rooms were not unfamiliar to me, the way that they used them was not the way I used them in my everyday walk around vocabulary. They were talking about a psychic change and this phenomenon of craving, this allergy of the body, and the way they used it, I needed some help with each one of those. But the first time I heard pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, didn't need no help with that one. Folk like us don't need a dictionary for pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I lived pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization up close and personal, and I lived it over and over and over and over again. See, I'm the kind of father, and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my living room couch. Wife coming out the bathroom real fast, pulling her pants up, going to the dining room table, picking her purse up off the table and clutching it real close to her. She went back to the bathroom. I feel this tall because nobody was in the house but me and her, but it got like that in my house. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember coming home, sticking my key in the door. Wife and two-year-old daughter sitting here and they both crying. I look over here and homeboy sitting in my seat with a gun pointed at my stomach talking about I want my money right now. Fellas, let me holler at you guys for just a minute. I don't know about the rest of you, but I always had a lot of fears and a lot of doubts about, do I have what it takes to be a father? Do I have what it takes to be a husband? Because if you're in the life, your track record already gives you the answer, right? Because what's the father's role and what's the husband's role? To protect and to provide, and it's a cold-blooded feeling, fellas. Laying in bed with a woman night after night after night after night, knowing not only aren't you protecting, knowing not only aren't you providing, you the one bringing the wolf to the door. They came up in my house several times. Each time I pretended to call 77. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband. Remember sitting on my back porch. Two-year-old daughter coming outside pulling at my coat. Daddy, daddy, that's my piggy bank. I remember stopping and giving her a little grin. Don't worry, baby. Daddy's gonna put some dollar bills in here for this change. And I wasn't raised to be stealing from my daughter. I wasn't raised to be stealing from my wife. I was an alcoholic with no tools of recovery. And I did what it took to get what I needed to get. I've shared with you that my disease is progressive in nature, and in my experience is progressive in a couple of areas. Share one area already. It takes more than it used to take in order for me to get the same effect. But my disease is progressive in another area, my behavior. My behavior gets progressively worse. I'm willing to do more readily, chase this thing. First time I hit my wife's purse, if you would hook me up to a polygraph, I would have passed when I told you I'm not stealing this $40. I'm going to take this $40, and I'm going to replace it before she knows it's missing. Meant it with everything in me, because I don't steal. Took that $40, went out and spent it up. Came back looking for some more money. She had moved the purse. I didn't look for the purse because I couldn't believe I had hit it like that. And I said to myself, I'm going to replace this money before she knows it's missing. You know, to our new friends, you may not know what you just walked into. This lifestyle and this way of living, I don't take it for granted. It amazes me. Every time I get to come out and hook up with you guys, the ties that bind us together. 1934 in December, Gentleman went to the hospital for the fourth time. Same hospital, same doctor. He had seen this guy several times. Told his old lady, matter of fact, Lois, get a black dress because you're gonna have to bury him or put him in the nut house. And something happened to this gentleman that December in 1934. And what happened to him was so profound that when he went to the doctor and explained and described what happened, the doctor, from the outside looking in, said, I don't know what it is that just happened to you, dude, but you need to hold on to it. That's a remarkable thing, from the outside looking in. And so Bill Wilson left Towns Hospital that December in 1934, and he spent 6 months going around looking for people like me and you. And in that six-month period, nobody was getting sober, but Bill stayed sober. In that period of time, some of his boys that he used to do business with put together a business proposition. And they said, we want you to represent us in this business deal. And if it goes through, you'll be set. Pretty lucrative. And they sent him off to Akron, Ohio to represent their interests. And he went to Akron, Ohio, and his business didn't come off too well. And he found himself in a hotel lobby on a Saturday afternoon. And that Saturday afternoon in that hotel lobby, he got thirsty. He could see the bar from the lobby, could hear the ice clinking in the glasses. Some remarkable things happened then for a guy like him, who's a guy like me. He got thirsty, and a thought came to his mind that I don't know where it would come from. He said, I need to find a drunk not to drink. Kind of shit. Not to drink? I didn't look for many drunks in my time. Never not to drink. You know. I need to find a drunk not to drink. And through a series of divine coincidences and phone calls, he got put in touch with a lady who had a husband who was one of us. And he talked to Ann Smith, and she said, well, Dr. Bob is indisposed at this time, but he'll give you 15 minutes tomorrow. And those two gentlemen met the next day. And that 15 minutes turned into about 4.5 hours. And they set about looking for people like me and you. And in the course of the next 2 years, about 40 people stayed sober. About 40 people. And I like to think that New York hustler must have looked at the Akron physician and said to him, how are we going to let Ralph White know when it's his turn? And they said, we'll put it in a book. And they put me in that book.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Sometimes don't you just think about it and marvel at how the hell am I up in this book? If you knew, you may not know the magic of that, but I'm telling you, go sit down with somebody who's had this experience, and you'll find yourself in that book. Blows me away. 2 weeks after I said I'm going to replace this money before she says it's missing, before she knows it's missing, I'm out doing the same thing, right? You know, and the idea of replacing the money didn't even come to mind when I ran through all my money. They got a line in that book that describes me to a T. Alcoholic could be unable to recall with sufficient force, pain, suffering, humiliation, weeks, even days. Didn't even remember I made that statement. I said, last time I took 40 and came back looking for some more, she had moved the purse. This time, I'm going to take all the money out the purse, and that I don't spend up, I'll sneak it back in the purse. Often running to hit my wife's purse on a regular basis. Did that one too many times, came back one Wednesday, a note was on the screen door. The rest of your stuff is at your mama's house. Suitcase on the porch, I'm put out of my house, I'm now my daddy. And over the course of the next year, my five brothers got put out their respective homes. We all ended up in my mom's house and we damn near killed her. When I got put out of my house and went to stay at my mom's house, my ex-wife thought it was something salvageable about this piece of man she married. She would bring my daughter over on Saturday afternoon so we could keep a father-daughter relationship. And I wanted to be a father to my little girl with everything in me. I really, really, really did. I wanted to take my girl to Disneyland and I wanted to take her to Magic Mountain. I wanted to take her to a movie on a Saturday afternoon. I wanted to walk up the street with her little hand in my big hand, take her to the store and just buy her some ice cream. I wanted to sit her in my lap and read stories to her. I wanted to tuck her in bed at night and get a good night kiss. I wanted to get the look from my little girl like I've seen men in the fellowship get, the look like this is my daddy and this is my hero. And the best I could do on those Saturdays was 30 minutes. 30 minutes. Tell my mom something like, I'm going to the store to buy Rain some ice cream. I disappear. Sneak back on Sunday night when her mom was coming to get her. And over some of those long Sunday nights, man, I can still remember sticking my head around the side of my mom's house, tears flowing. And I'm sticking my head around the side of the house, and I see those two heads in the car and the headlights backing out the driveway, and through the tears, I'd be thinking to myself, there goes my life backing out this driveway. And I've heard a lot of people share they were scared of dying out there, not a part of my story. Never scared of dying, scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Monday the same as Tuesday, the same as Sunday, the same as Christmas, over and over and over again. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October the 11th, 1986, I got miserable enough, I got tired enough, I got directed to my fourth program of recovery. I was in a real dark place and I was in a real bad way that October in 1986. I was full of remorse and I was full of regret. And I was full I'd never be able to forgive myself for the things I had done and what I had become. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe what had happened with my life. I'm the real Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde that Bill talks about in the book. 1985, it's a trip. As my alcoholism was increasing, I was rising up in the workplace. So I was the business guy by day, and I'm the vampire by night. You know the cool thing about that double life if you're an alcoholic? The vampire always outgrows the businessman. The vampire always outgrows the school teacher. The vampire always outgrows the housewife. The vampire always takes over. So the vampire starts showing up at work. Sometimes, you know, I'm going to work in the same suit, same clothes, same, you know. So the vampire starts showing up at work, and the vampire don't work at work. And they don't pay the vampire to come to work. So one day they told the vampire, you got to go and take dude with you. So I'm out my dream job. I was working in management in a major utility company in the law department of management, and I'm out my dream job. And so from 85 to 86, I went to the twilight zone. I went to the dead zone. I'm one of the ones that you'll find walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm one of the ones that you'll find doing the aimless walk. I'm one of the ones that you'll find walking the walk of no hope. I'm one of the ones that on Sunday morning you'll find stumbling up out of a motel room wanting to shoot the birds for singing and wanting to shoot the couples for going to church. I'm one of them. I'm one of them. And I stumbled to you guys that October in 1986. I was in a real bad way, and I was in a real dark place. And I was full of remorse and full of regret. They took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous 2 days after I was in the Harbor Life Center. And a gentleman was standing up in front of the group, somewhat like I am this morning. And he was sharing about taking from the job, and he was sharing about taking from the family. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that. I'm different. Y'all ain't going to hear my business. Speaker seemed like he knew I was in the room. Drop something on me like this. He said, if you're sitting in this room right now, you are not responsible for your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself, and you don't have to drink, and you don't have to use no matter what, provided you are willing to fulfill some conditions. And that speaker that night caught my attention. He went on to say, this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, better off your chances of staying. And I got the message of hope at the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous he took me to. He described to me what I suffer from. He did it in a real strange way. Dude was talking about me, talking about himself. I had never seen anything like it. He seemed like he shared that it was something physically different about him, and seemed like he invited me to diagnose myself. Ralph, don't take my word for it. How many times did you say, I'm just going to spend 20? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm just going to stop off at happy hour? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to go over here to my boy Steve's house for a minute? What happened? Whole paycheck. Ralph, did it happen once? Did it happen twice? If your name is Ralph, whole paycheck every 2 weeks from 1979, 1985. My experience, not yours, not my sponsors, not the oldest old timer. My experience abundantly confirms for me when I take one of anything, no matter where I have to go, who I have to see, what I have to do, no matter how great the wish or the necessity, my body takes over and I have to have another. Okay, smart guy, if it's just my body, how do you explain stone sober, my car seemed to drive to the LIQ on payday? Second part of this disease, the mental obsession, the obsession that somehow, someday, I will be able to control and enjoy this magic potion I discovered. Somebody help me control and enjoy. Check this out. Anytime I was controlling, I wasn't enjoying. Anytime I was enjoying, I damn sure wasn't controlling. Why am I stuck on control and enjoy? I can't drink because of my body. I can't not because my mind refuses to accept that fact I'm powerless. Third part is disease, spiritual malady. 12 and 12 describes it as a soul sickness. And in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, Ralph, if you work on the spiritual, the mental, and the physical are straightened out, that's what we do. Don't get scared. Damn, dude had me. I know, newcomer. I know your face fell. I did the same thing. The dude had me. I like what he was saying. You know, the worse off you are when you get here, better. Yeah, I like all that. But you're getting ready to hit me with the G word, and I'm not feeling that. I'm really not feeling that, dude. You can call it creative intelligence. You can call it spirit of the universe. You can call it all that other stuff you want. You can dress it up however you want to, but you can't fool me. You're talking about the G word. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, with your 28 years, the God idea, they just come flowing out your mouth, but you don't understand me. I came in here to stop drink. I ain't trying to hear all the rest of that. Check this out. I did not come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. And if your ass is on fire, it's a good place for you. Worry about all that. I learned some anatomical facts about a guy named Ralph. Now check this out. I'm a speaker, and everything I know about recovery, you know, I'm a guy that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it has opened my eyes to things I never seen before. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is our basic text for recovery. When you get Ralph White, you get all of me. You get all of me. You get my experiences also. And I'm going to share some things. I'm going to share some things to our new friends. I'm going to share some things that you won't find in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous right now. I'm going to share some things that you'll find in the big book of my own experience. I learned some anatomical facts about a guy named Ralph. I learned that when I was new, when my ass is raw, my ears open and my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running and my ears start closing. Thank God I was tenderized well enough, long enough to hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous this last time. I was taking everything serious. When I was new, I was sitting up here. I had started out sitting back there, but when that came in here with that last piece of behind hanging, I started sitting up in the front and I started doing the things that, man, I was 33 years old and I was tired of losing. I put some tools in my simple kit of spiritual tools in addition to the ones that we talked about in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to give you the first tool. Get a sobriety date. If you ain't got one, you don't have one. If somebody walks up to you and say, what's your sobriety date? You say, you ain't got one. Water it, nurture it, treat it. For most of us sitting in this room, it's our prized possession. Been through a lot of things in recovery, man. Ain't got another day. That day gives me a shot. I'm in the game. Get a sobriety day. Get a home group. Home group is something like a Cheers bar. It's somewhere you go where everybody know your name. Get a home group. Get a sponsor. These days, people put a lot of extra requirements on a sponsor. Get a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a working out in there. Get a sponsor. I'm always amused when we all try to entrust the brand new person with all the skills to do sponsorship interviewing. Get a sponsor. Check this out. That sponsor might change, but I'm going to share something with you to our new friends, particularly our used new friends. I'm going to share something with you. There's something involved in the conversation. There's power in the conversation of help me. There's power in the realization for my damn self, not for nobody else, for myself. Yeah, new friend, we know you. I'm a grown ass man. You can't tell me what I know. Till you get in one of them positions like Carl says, shackled, and they telling you what to do. No, you can sponsor, I'd rather you tell me what to do than they tell me what to do. You know, get up in here and yeah, there's something in the conversation. Because I'm going to tell you what you really need, the most valuable kid in the spiritual, you know, and we talk about it, and, you know, and we talk about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. But when there's a part in the book where it talks about the essentials, and one of the essentials it talks about is enough humility, and that's the one. That's the one. Get a sponsor. Then get a road dog. Road dog is different than your sponsor. Probably ain't going to be running with your sponsor, may not be hanging out. Later on, that relationship might grow. My sponsor and I, very good. But initially, you know, because I was in this for the long haul, and if this thing ain't fun, you'd have a different speaker. I do this thing. I have a lot of fun in recovery. A road dog is different than your sponsor. With your sponsor, you come correct. No, sir, I'm not looking at girls in the meeting. Yeah, I'm listening, you know. But with your road dog, that's who you talk about your sponsor with, right? You know. With your road dog, you be, man, did you see them honeys in the ring? Yeah, man, we going back to that meeting. You know, with your road dog, that's, yeah. Make it fun. And I had my brother and my boy Strange, and we had a little yellow bucket that we shared between us. Whoever had a panel could take the car that night, and we started doing the damn thing, doing the damn thing, doing the damn thing, doing the damn thing. I'm telling you, I have so much. I am dead serious about recovery, but you seldom see me serious in recovery. If you ain't laughing in this program, you ain't taking this program serious enough. You know, I was rolling with a guy one day, and we were out somewhere, and we were doing a panel. At the time, Tom, I had about 53, 54 years sober. And I remember him fielding a question from the group. And one of the questions was, what's the most important thing you found in your 50-something years of recovery? What's held you? And he didn't say a conscious contact with a guy. He didn't say anything flowery like I thought. He said one word. He said enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. Old-timers, sponsors, folk up in here. This is supposed to be a program of attraction. God damn it, if it's supposed to be attractive, make it attractive. Don't be up here, there ain't no easier. So, no. Enthusiasm. You know, so I got on board, man, and I got involved in this thing, and I started doing this thing. I'm a guy. I don't know. When you in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, everything look different, especially when you in it. When you in it. I remember being in Vegas. I don't remember if I was sober, drunk, probably both times, because you'll see it occasionally all the time. You sit at a table, right, and you be at the table nursing your little, you know, chips, and some dude come through, and he might put in, you know, a gang of, you'd be like, what? And he just come walking by, and he put them all in. Damn, he putting in, you know, 2,000, 3, you know, just all in. And he sticks them in like, yeah. And then he take the hand, because I play blackjack, and he's, you know, whatever. And I would always marvel at a guy that would be like, all in. And on October the 11th, 1986, I pushed mine all in. I got all in. Why would I do that? Why would I? Don't that seem stupid when you see a guy like that? Why would you do that? I had taken the negative second step already. I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. I had come to believe I'm going to be walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I had come to be seeing the speaker you have this morning. I'm not the one that's going to be sharing a message of fear. That's not the message that I carry to you guys. If you listen to my story and you read between the lines, you know I was doing some of everything. And what I used to think of as my heyday, people used to look at me and be like, damn, Ralph, ain't you scared of overdose? I'm scared of overdose. I'm scared of deadly underdose. You better put some more up on here, you know. So the message of fear is not the message of the whole alcoholic of my variety. The Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the message that interests a guy like me. And it talks about the message that interests a guy like me, and it does, is the message of depth and weight. And that message of depth and weight that this morning speaker has to bring to you is that you're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had given up on life. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old did not know where his family was living and didn't know where his little girl was enrolled in school. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had not answered anybody's 8 6 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake up call to go to work in so long, I no longer thought I was employable. You're looking at a guy who came from a major university in this country, and my job at the end was taking the trash out for a 21-year-old. I was sleeping in the back of my mother's garage, and I was eating lemons off a neighbor's lemon tree for breakfast. And the men and women in this fellowship, you met me in that condition, and you loved me, and you nursed me back to health. You gave me a way out upon which we all agree. You gave me some steps, and the beauty and the gift that I got from the minute I came here, I fell in love with the fellowship before I fell in love with the program. I'm a three legacy guy, and through our new friends, you'll hear people talk about stuff like legacies and the rest. What does that mean? That means our program is composed of three parts, and if you really want to have a recovery that's full and alive and vital and awake and doing something in your life, not just doing something at a meeting, if you really want to be somebody in your own life and be able to show up and participate in your own life, we do three things. First, we have our first legacy. We call it a legacy. First part of our program is unity. We're doing that and we're practicing that right now. We go to meetings and we go to meetings and we go to meetings. That's our fellowship. And I fell in love with that, you know, and I've had to be carried by that at various points of my recovery. And I started going to meetings long enough that I heard a common theme in meetings. And that was that the meetings I was going to, the program of the recovery is in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to work the steps. You got to work the steps. I'm the kind of guy that when I get involved in anything, I like to know about what I'm involved in. So I said, why be in a 12-step program and not work the 12 steps? So I invited some people to come to my mom's house, my brother and I and my boy Strange. We had got excited about the way some people had talked about these steps and had talked about this book. And in November of 1987, we invited some people into my mom's house. And about 12 of us sat around a dining room table, and we started going through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page, line by line. And we went through it as a group through the first 7 chapters, which contain the 12 steps. And we did that, and it took about a year. And we did it again. We took off a month. Some other people heard about it. They said, we want to do it with you. And we did it again. And we did it again, and we did it again, and we kept doing it. And since November of 1987, we've been meeting the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop. And now they're meeting as I speak right now. You know, they're meeting as I speak, and we started at 12 people around my mother's dining room table, and now we are up to about 250 people who come to our meetings on Sunday mornings, and it's one of the great gifts that I've gotten. The recovery aspect of this deal, important, you know, not talking about it, applying the 12 steps to where I live in my life. And as a result of those 12 steps, you'll get a result, and it's still, and we talk about that. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result, what do you do with a woke up spirit? Put it in the service. And that's our third legacy, new friends, service. You've seen it as you've been around here. You've seen the greeters. You've seen the hosts. You've seen some people who have more ribbons on their chest than a 4-star general up in this piece, you know. And the service, service, it's the magic. It's where the magic takes place, you know, and I'm so grateful. You know, you get me up here, and I'm doing the spotlight work at Alcoholics Anonymous right now. I'm standing in front of the group, and everybody sees me, all eyes on me, and the rest of that. But I take my hat off to who I like to call the shadow soldiers. Those are the ones in the back. Those are the ones that, even though it's the Final Four, and Monday night it'll be the final game of the Final Four, and that Monday night somebody's going to get up. They're going to leave home, they're going to fire up the coffee pot, they're going to open up the meeting house, and they're going to wait for Ralph White to show up. 7th game of the World Series, they're going to get out of their bed, they're going to open up the hall, they're going to fire up the coffee pot, and they're going to wait for Ralph White. So, you know, Super Bowl Sunday, they're going to go to a jail, they're going to go to an institution, and they're going to look for Ralph White. And my hat is off. I call them the shadow soldiers, and I'm so grateful that somebody kept the lights on for a drunk like me. I feel, you get a different language when you get in Alcoholics Anonymous. You get a different family. New friends, you don't know what you signed up for. You just became a part of a family. Brand new family. First name, your name, last name, alcoholic. You never walk alone another day in your life. No matter where you are, you are in another family. And stuff looks different, right? Every holiday looks different, has a different meaning. Independence, that, ooh, we know about that if you are alcoholic. Easter and a resurrection. Do we not know what a resurrection looks like? For real, for real? You know, so every holiday, and you know, I just get full. And I'm getting, because what it is that we do, I'm attempting to do it this morning. We can't. You guys task us. You ask Carl, all the other speakers this weekend, they come out, and you task us to do something that really is an impossible task. You ask us to put words to something for which it's no words. I'm a guy who suffers from an illness that only a spiritual experience conquered. Somehow, some way, this same guy has tapped into that experience, but I can't tell you what it feels like. I have my friend Strange always says, you can't describe the taste of a banana. So you get speakers up here, and we tell you our stories. Because we're a storytelling society, and we tell our stories, and what we attempt to do is make what it is that we've discovered and we've tapped into so appealing that you want to bite a banana for yourself. We attempt to make it so appealing, because I can't tell you what it feels like when this power is power in my life. I got on my knees, first year recovery. I got on my knees with a group of people. And I said, God, I offer myself to you. Do something with me. Do something with this piece of man. Here's what I like about our program. You don't have to be right. You don't have to come right to get right. Come as you are. You ain't already got to be right when you get on your knees in the third step. Still hoeing. Still tripping. Still lying. Still. Do something with me right here, right now, like this. And I got up off my knees, and I started taking the actions that you guys have outlined for me to give legs to that decision I made in that third step. I started uncovering, discovering, and discarding. I started tasting what this power feels like flowing in my life. I started cleaning up my past and being able to look the world in the eye. I started living life on a different, and something happened. He did something with me. In my 28 years in this deal, I've had a lot of ups and I've had a lot of downs, and I welcome that. It beats flatline. I'm just coming out of my third valley not too long ago. And in that valley, I lost my house, I lost all my money, I lost a 20-year marriage. But I got trained feet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had trained feet. I remember I was sitting in O'Hare Airport. I don't know where we're going. I'm getting ready to get out of here. I was sitting in O'Hare Airport, getting ready to go talk at a deal on the third step. Talking to my old college roommate. He had lost his dad, and I'm talking to him on the phone. And he's telling me how he still had all his properties and he still had his money and he still was doing well. And each time he was talking, instead of me being the way I normally am, which is reveling in his success, it felt like he was jabbing with a knife. I was jealous. I was envious. I was resentful. I was regretful. I was remorseful. I got off the phone and I'm crying in O'Hare Airport. Crying. Can't feel God. Don't know his number. It's like when you don't have your cell phone and now you don't memorize nobody's number. You can't call nobody. You know, just, I ain't praying. I ain't thinking about it, but I got trained feet. I got trained feet. So I pick up my telephone. I either call my sponsor or I call one of my close, my friends, and I call one of my boys. I'm crying. I'm going to tell you a secret when you get in the dark place. I'm going to tell you a secret when you get to the place you can't pray. I'm going to tell you a secret when you get to the place where you ain't feeling the power, but you sure need the power to just make another step. I'm going to tell you a secret. Train your feet. Get with somebody who is connected when you ain't connected. Because when I was talking to my boy on the phone, here's what happened. I'm going to tell you what happened for you, too. While we were talking, guy got on the line. He three-wayed me. He three-wayed me. When two or more of us are gathered, he'll get on the line. Imagine what it's like when all of us are he's on the line. He's in the room. That's why we don't do this by ourselves. He's in the room. He's done something in my life. I'm still, I'm blown away by it. Got a 20-year-old daughter. She's a sophomore at Boston University. She's never seen her daddy loaded, and one day at a time, she never will. You know how you get those gray shots every now and then? You know, September, we were moving her into her first house. She had two roommates. I flew to Boston. And then, you know, and my brother's back there, and we're moving her in. Her roommates had their parents moving them in too. And I had to step in a bathroom, right? You guys, you've felt it. I had to step in a bathroom because the grace just came on me. It's like, damn, this is what dads do. He did something with me. That two-year-old daughter whose piggy bank I was going in, she's 31 years old right now. Shadow shared last night about walking his daughter down the aisle. January 18th, me and that girl walked down the aisle. The one whose piggy bank I was going in, she was two. We walked down the aisle. She's a practicing attorney in the state of California. And when she went through undergrad, when she went through law school, play daddy didn't put her through, stepdaddy didn't put her through, uncle didn't put Alcoholics Anonymous. We walking down the aisle, rain is on my arm, and she's shaking. She said, Dad, this is the happiest day of my life. She said, I'm sad about one thing. I said, what's that, baby? She said, I'm sad because this is going to be the last day that I'm rain white, but I'll always be daddy's girl. That's what we do. That's what we do. My mom is 75 years old. My mom is 85 years old. People always ask Ralph, is your mom still alive? My mom is alive and kicking, you know. 75th birthday, we gave her a surprise birthday party, me and my brothers. At the end of the night, we were sitting around reminiscing and going over the day, and my mom said something, hadn't known her, because she's the oldest of her siblings. Then she started having babies when she was young. She said, Ralph, this is the first time I've ever had a birthday party. Alcoholics Anonymous. So when you see me in front of you, I'm still as grateful as the day I came. How many people in here sponsor? Isn't that a wonderful thing, you know, to sponsor somebody? To see the lights come on in somebody's eye. We saw those two ladies come up here, and they came up here with that one day and eyes down and looking, and it's going to be a hell of a thing to see them bloom and blossom. It's going to be a hell of a thing to see it right in front of your face. And there's some other lights that go on that I don't like us to take for granted whenever we get together. We see the lights that come on in the rooms, but we light other lights. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some little boy or some little girl getting ready to have mama come back. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate in some family. We're doing it right now, getting ready to have daddy come home. Every time I go to a meeting, I get to participate in some man or some woman getting ready to have a hell of a mate in their life. Every time I go to a meeting, who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? I've always wanted to do something important, and I've always wanted to do something significant. I can think of nothing more important, and I can think of nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that is Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that, I'm responsible. I take it real serious. You'll never hear Ralph White say, I don't know why I'm sober. I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, that's my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.
Thank you.
hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.